So let's talk now about your cell phone. Admit it, you love it. You depend on it. It keeps you in touch with your family and friends wherever they are, wherever you are.
You use it to browse the web, to shop, to find your way around any city or town in the world. It is a modern marvel.
It is also a modern device of mass surveillance. Every time you slip that phone into your pocket or purse, you're making a deal with the carrier. You get to use it to make calls, but the company gets your data. Lots of data. Where you are, where you shop, who you're with, where you sleep, even who you sleep with.
Our next guest says we are living in the golden age of surveillance, not just because of your phone, but because of your computer, the cloud, and a government security apparatus and big business, which mine, track, and sell your data without your consent.
Bruce Schneier says all this threatens our privacy and freedom, and it's time to wake up and do something about it. Schneier is a security technologist and a fellow at Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. He's also one of the few people to review the Edward Snowden documents, and he has a new book. It's called Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Capture Your Data and Control Your World. And he joins us now from Minnesota Public Radio. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's really good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you begin your book, and we started there in the introduction with it, talking about smartphones and this implicit bargain that we all make with the carriers. We get to use the phones. They get the data. So let's start there. What do we really need to understand about that bargain?
We need to understand that these computers we use are collecting our data. They naturally do it because they're computers, and there's a huge business behind that of using our data. So it's your phone. It's also Google, which if you think about it, you don't pay for any of those services. You're paying with your data. Facebook. All of these are examples of systems that make money with your personal data that you might not be thinking about as you use them.
Yeah. So what should we be thinking about? I mean, give us an example. And you write about a lot of these in your book. I mean, about what's being done with our data in terms. Let's start on the business side, because obviously you also talk about the government surveillance side. But start on the business side. What kinds of sort of surprising businesses are being put together and thought about with our data without us knowing about it?
So here's an example. There's a company that pays attention when you are shopping for a car. So it collects the data about the sort of car you're looking at, what sites you visit, what options you look at, what colors, what features, and matches that to your name. And when you walk into a dealership, they sell that information to the dealership. So the person you meet on the floor knows what you're interested in, even if you don't tell them. There's a whole back end of getting the showroom car dealer information about what you want, what price you're willing to pay, everything about you without you knowing about it. Yeah. That, of course, gives the dealer an advantage. It's a few hundred dollars when researchers looked at what that advantage was. There's just one example of how your data is being used against you.
Mm. On the other hand, all of this technology, these devices, companies like Google, they're providing us with all kinds of convenience. And you summarize what a company like Google offers us. And you say basically they're saying, if you let us have all your data, we will show you advertisements that you want to see. We'll throw in a free web search, email, and all sorts of other services. Isn't that a pretty good deal? Or I guess the question is, why isn't that a good deal?
Well, you know, it's certainly a deal. Coming to this studio here in St. Paul, there was a traffic jam, and it was Google that alerted me, rerouted me, and got me to the studio on time.
Yeah.
So it can be enormously beneficial. But it is a bargain that we might not fully understand.
Right.
Right now in the United States, Google can do anything with the data they want. They're not restricted. So there are no rules about how they have to preserve it. You think of the data breaches, Target, Home Depot, Anthem Health. Those are companies that had data on tens of millions of people, and they lost it. They didn't secure it well. So there's a lot of risks that come with these bargains, which on the surface, might be pretty good. You know, we actually don't mind that Google shows us targeted ads. We object more to companies that sell our data to third parties, and then suddenly, who knows, and it's used for all sorts of purposes, we lose control of our data.
Yeah. So that's the corporate side. There's also the government surveillance side, and we've heard a lot about widespread data mining by the NSA, and there's been some outrage expressed from people like you that have raised big concerns about it. But by and large, it seems like the response in the U.S. has been surprisingly muted. There's been no, you know, serious congressional effort to rein in the NSA. There's no sort of Occupy movement out in the street. Does this surprise you?
Well, I think the reaction has been stronger than that. There have been concerted efforts to rein in the NSA in Congress. They haven't succeeded yet, but there have been surprising votes, and surprisingly strong members of Congress are saying things. This is becoming an issue. There was a Pew survey last week which showed that a lot of Americans have taken steps to protect themselves against government surveillance, and that some group are not taking steps because they fear that taking steps means they will be targeted more. There's more awareness. There's more worry. People are concerned about this. I expect this will be a bigger issue in the next election than most people think, because we are seeing this slow groundswell of worry. It's not at the Occupy level, but the Occupy level is pretty extreme.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm reading sort of from your own book, you know, our response to all this creeping surveillance has largely been passive. So that's sort of what the question I was getting at. I mean, do you think that we need to do more to be less passive in our response to this?
You know, I think we do. I actually don't think this is something a market can solve. I think we have to solve this through legislation. Right now, if you think about it, there are rules about doctors. If we tell doctors our intimate secrets, and we should tell them those, they are required by law not to divulge it. There are rules. If we search on WebMD, which is a site on the internet that does this, they are allowed to sell all that information, all those things we search for, all the comments we make, sell those to any drug company, any marketer they want. The same rules don't apply. I think we need some rules that govern the companies that we choose to share information with, that restrict what they can do about it. And lots of other ways that rules can protect us. Right now, we need to observe the surveillance, pay attention to it, and talk about it. For this to become an issue, we need to pay attention to it more. And you're right. When you started the show, a cell phone is an enormously intimate surveillance device. We don't think of it as such. I don't pick up the phone and say, I'm putting my surveillance device in my pocket today. I put my phone in my pocket.
Yeah, and I want to give credit to you, by the way. That came right out of your introduction, and it really sort of opened my eyes and made me think about it. I mean, the cell phone is a mass surveillance device. It kept me awake for part of last night, I got to say.
Well, I don't mean to keep people awake, although some of this stuff is alarming. You know, in some sense, we're in a better country than most. You go to China, and this information, the same information, people are using email, they're using internet chat, they're using cell phones. It's being used for mass surveillance, for social control. So these same technologies in the hands of a less benevolent government become an enormously powerful political tool.
So is that your biggest concern? I mean, we're not there yet, but if the government, if big business has this power of big data, our data, this is where it could lead.
Well, it is there somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's certainly corporations use this data for persuasion, for psychological manipulation, for advertising. And they're slicing and dicing us in different ways. They're discriminating based on lots of our habits, figuring out what they can sell us, how they can charge us, when we're most vulnerable. So it is being used for manipulation by companies, because in the U.S. that sort of thing is legal.
Sure.
It's being used by governments against marginal populations in the United States to a much greater degree. It determines whether we can fly an airplane, whether we get a mortgage. And in other countries, it's being used to arrest people, which is much more dangerous. Now, I don't see that happening in a mass scale in the United States, but I don't want to export that technology to other countries.
Sure. And of course, when it comes to government surveillance and the government mining this kind of data, the trade-off, we're told, is about security. And the argument in favor of surveillance is that it protects us from terrorists in this post-9/11 age. You don't buy that argument, do you?
I don't, and the data doesn't support that. You know, whenever we see groups review this, even groups with access to classified information, they don't come away with the conclusion that these mass surveillance programs keep us safe. They come to the conclusion at best that they are insurance policies just in case.
Right.
When we capture people, when we foil terrorist plots, it's from following the leads. The liquid bombers in London were an example of that. You think about, we're talking about the Boston bombers again. Right? They were not caught through mass surveillance, even though one of them was on the terrorist watch list and the other one had a sloppy Facebook trail. And these sorts of things show us that mass surveillance isn't useful for this purpose. It's being used, but it's not useful.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you read this. Jonathan Nee wrote a somewhat critical review of your book in the New York Times. And on this issue, he wrote, even if traditional investigative police work is ultimately responsible for successfully identifying the truly dangerous, there are still reasons that the public would want our spies to have access to a ready cache of metadata. And he went on and said, as soon as the bad guy is found using old-fashioned methods, data mining of previous communication would still presumably lead to the speedy identification of known associates with potentially life-saving efficiency. What did you make of that?
Well, I mean, it's a good story, but we find that that is not the case, that the way we find associates is by following the leads through old-fashioned police work. Through investigation intelligence, not through data mining. Certainly, if the data exists, it'll be used, but it ends up not being essential. There are other techniques, there are other ways the police and intelligence can unravel plots, find associates that work without the need for pervasive surveillance. Yeah. Targeted surveillance makes a lot of sense, and there are lots of instances where we'll use it, but it's the broad pervasive surveillance of everybody, everybody's call records, everybody's license plate records, everybody's location. That's what is dangerous and not needed for our security.
It seems like, though, when we're talking about everybody's information, it makes us, maybe it's a false sense of security, but I kind of subconsciously feel this, that, you know, if they've got everybody's information and mine is in there, I don't really feel threatened by that.
I think that's because we have a very human view of how this works.
Sure.
We think about a person, and there are hundreds of millions of records in filing cabinets. Not that they possibly find us. But this analysis is done by computers. And computers are really good at 100 million records and finding somebody. That the intuition we have about how this data is analyzed and used isn't right because it's all done by computers. And you can't hide among everybody. It's easy to find individuals among the masses if computers are doing the searching.
Yeah.
And it turns out, and we see this in lots of research, that our anonymity can be pierced very easily. Four location points uniquely identifies us. We can be identified by the movies we like. It really is surprising how easy it is to unravel who we are based on what we do, because when you get away from sort of the top things that everyone does the same, we're all pretty unique.
Yeah.
And no one else lives and works in exactly the same two locations you do.
Bruce Schneier, you know, you argue that unless we sort of wake up and do something about this, we're really giving away our freedom and that all this surveillance is a real risk to our society. But I have a kind of fear here that the genie is out of the bottle. I mean, how do we get it back in the bottle? I mean, with all the power of government surveillance and all of the sort of mesmerizing abilities of big business, it just seems incredibly hard for me to imagine how we get this genie back in the bottle.
I think it is hard. And if you think through history, society has solved problems of this magnitude before, that even things that are pervasive and seem like you can't turn them around, you can't stop them. We have. It takes work. It takes years. But this is not going to be the problem that stifles society. This is not going to be the end of freedom. We're not going to live in a surveillance state from now until the end of time. That just seems unreasonable. I think it is hard. I think there's a lot of hard work to do. But I do think we'll do it. If we don't do it, our children will.
All right, this
problem will be solved.
All right. Well, that's Bruce Schneier. He's a security technologist and fellow at Harvard University. He's the author of the new book, Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Capture Your Data and Control Your World. Bruce Schneier, thank you so much for talking to us. Very grateful.
Thank you.
There's more in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.